Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined in Brighton by Katie Balls and in London by James Forsyth. Now, James, Katie and I are in a conference bubble, and this year the conference bubble has got particularly thick walls in that the fuel crisis isn't really percolating that much. So just bring us up to speed on what most of the country is interested in.
So the fuel crisis continues to dominate the news. Grant Shapps, kind of the ever-optimistic Transport Secretary, has been out suggesting there are some early signs that the situation is beginning to stabilise. And I think this is the government's big hope, is that unlike with kind of loo roll and pasta at the beginning of the COVID crisis, you know, there's not many places you can store petrol, other, certainly safely, other than your car. And so once people have filled up, then those problems should come to an end. But I think there are still supply problems. I heard yesterday from a lawyer friend of mine who's doing a trial, and the defendant couldn't be brought to court because there wasn't sufficient fuel for him to be driven to attend. There are stories today of teachers being unable to get to work to teach their classes, care workers unable to reach people. You've had the BMA suggesting there should be kind of priority given to NHS staff and other emergency workers. But I think the government's hope is that the kind of short term crisis begins to smooth out, because what you essentially saw over the weekend was a very large amount of people filling up their car for the week in anticipation of troubles to come, and that should ease some of the pressure as the week goes on. That might well be true, but I don't think that solves some of the underlying problems. And I think one of the things that complicates this debate is everyone wants to debate whether it's about Brexit or not about Brexit. I think it would be foolish to claim that Brexit isn't a factor at all. But it's obviously not just Brexit, because there are shortages of lorry drivers in lots of EU countries too, most noticeably Poland. And I think one of the things that makes this actually makes the situation worse for the UK, because it means that the UK offer of a kind of 3-month visa is even less attractive than it would otherwise be, because there is no shortage of work for truck drivers within the EU. So either the UK is going to have to be hiring truck drivers from further afield, from kind of Ukraine or Moldova or places like that, or the UK is going to have to be offering visas of longer duration, and UK haulage firms will have to be offering considerably higher salaries.
I have to say that I haven't heard that much mention of this crisis in Brighton. Is Labour making the most of a crisis, or has it failed to notice what's going on in the outside world?
Labour is in a way ignoring this crisis if you walk to various fringe events and even listen to the conference speeches. Now, in a way that is understandable, lots of plans and time has, you know, been put into what policy agendas people want to set out. But then I also think that you'd imagine that an opposition could be more reactive than Labour are currently being in terms of the fuel crisis. Now, we know Keir Starmer wants to use this conference to try and deal with his internal feuds and then have the party ready. He managed to get some of his rule changes through, and at that point he thinks is when you can start to take your message to the public. But I think it is striking how little the fuel crisis in terms of supply chain issues has been mentioned, when you would imagine, when most people in the country are not thinking about Labour conference, but the fact in many cases they can't fill their car up and go to work, that would be the thing that had the most cut through. I think particularly because you see obviously fewer ministers going on the radio and on the airwaves, because it is conference, it's custom to that Labour really take up that space. There is an opportunity to really set the narrative out there. But instead of focusing on things like government incompetence and various issues, how this went wrong, Labour wants to talk about Labour.
I mean, what Katie said there is right. I think Isabel's blog on this point is correct. I think Labour had a real opportunity this week to use the focus on them to attack the government over the fuel shortages. Been up in London doing an interview today for Tory conference. It has been remarkable to my mind how little you are seeing coming from Brighton trying to attack the government on what is clearly, I think, its biggest current weakness, which are these these fuel shortages. And I think this is a problem for Labour, that a good opposition gets itself into the biggest story of the day with its critique of the government. And I mean, it is a problem for Labour that it appears disconnected from this crisis. Now, that there are some hints that Keir Starmer is going to try and change this round tomorrow in his conference speech. But at the moment, I think there does appear to be an odd disconnect between this big story, which is a rare news story in that it is affecting most people in the country. Very few news stories do. And what is going on down on the coast.
Katie, this is the first time we've spoken on this podcast since the shock resignation of Andy McDonald from the Shadow Cabinet. How is the party coping with his absence today?
Well, Labour conference is still going. They haven't had to cancel an event because of Andy McDonald's exit. And I think when it broke last night, it was interesting in the sense that you could just see quite visible anger from members of Keir Starmer's team, the Shadow Cabinet. I think that they felt as though they hadn't been given any advance notice of the fact that he was going to quit. Andy McDonald says that he has quit over the fact that Keir Starmer did not support raising the minimum wage as high as he wanted to, even though Keir Starmer had previously suggested around the time he was running for the leadership it could be something he was open to. I think you could see from walking around conference at the time this broke that the resignation landed very badly with Keir Starmer's team and members of the Shadow Cabinet. Now, that's not particularly surprising. It's not really done thing to resign at a conference. I think that if you resign at party conference, you clearly realise you're going to get a lot of traction. And I think people have been quick to say that this was almost something planned by Andy McDonald. Now, he says that the fact that he resigned all relates to the minimum wage, the fact that Keir Starmer did not want to raise it as high as he did, despite the fact that Keir Starmer had suggested it could be something he supported back when he was running for the leadership. But I think it's just another sign of how, yes, Keir Starmer has had a victory to a degree on the rules for selecting Labour leader to make it harder for a Corbyn-style candidate in the future. But in terms of putting Labour infighting away, there just doesn't seem to be any clear way of doing that. And then today you have Jeremy Corbyn joining Andy McDonald and, you know, pushing for this. You have Laura Pidcock, the former Labour MP who lost her seat in the 2019 election, touring the broadcast studios in support. And I think given that Keir Starmer wants to send the message that Labour has changed from Jeremy Corbyn, I think that taking on the left in the way he has just means that one of the risks has come to fruition, which is lots of airtime for the people you want to say that your party is not like anymore.
So, Katie, the kind of optimistic take from the Starmerites is that this confrontation with the left of the party, you know, it's a self-owned by the left by picking a fight over a £15 minimum wage. They've gone too high, too far. And Keir Starmer has now got rid of the Jeremy Corbyn kind of element from his shadow cabinet, and it leaves him in a stronger position. Is that too Panglossian?
I think that you can see that argument, and I don't think that Keir Starmer is personally upset to lose this person from his shadow cabinet. I think that his team would have been quite happy if this person had never really been in Keir Starmer's shadow cabinet. And I think it all depends, is in the sense that they didn't have a particularly senior position, but it is someone who is closer to the unions. I think while you have a figure like Angela Rayner supporting Keir Starmer, I don't think the departure of Andy McDonald is going to change that, particularly unions that are hostile to Keir Starmer are still going to be. But I think it would have to be a more significant person to show that, you know, Keir Starmer had moved so far, not even those on the soft left can support him anymore. I don't think he is important enough in that sense to have that impact. I do think when it comes to why it perhaps isn't too Panglossian, it's quite easy to criticise this Labour conference if you look at what has been leading the news, the bulletins you've been hearing from being in London, and the fact they seem out of step and on the main issue of the day. But I think there is another way of looking at it, which is that they have managed to get quite a significant rule change through, which means it's much harder to deselect Labour MPs. It is now the case that if Keir Starmer to step down, you would need a higher threshold, to the point that that small block of Corbynite MPs would not be able to alone get a candidate. You have to bring other MPs on board to do that. And I think that is making the Labour leadership feel far more confident now about trying to push through what Keir Starmer wants to do. And what Keir Starmer wants to do, as we're seeing, is moving more to the centre, no matter what his team might say, oh no, he's not moving to the right, but it is moving away from lots of these promises he made when he was being elected as Labour leader. And at that point, it was advantageous to, I think, pose, you know, photos of him, you know, embracing Jeremy Corbyn, all these pledges. And I think we're seeing him move away from that. And I think the rule changes mean that they have the confidence that they can be a bit bolder. So I think that is probably the main takeaway from this conference, if you think about how it's going to impact what Keir Starmer does in the coming months.
Now, if I was on the Corbynite wing of the party, I would look at these rule changes, which don't go as far as Keir Starmer wanted, but they do make it more difficult for the Corbynite wing of the party. And I would think that they are trying to make it more difficult for someone from that wing of the party to succeed Keir Starmer. And you'd be better off picking your fight sooner rather than later. Do you think that's what's going on with Andy McDonald's resignation?
I think potentially. I think there's clearly an effort by those on the left of the party to back Andy McDonald, to say, you know, to try and make this into something that's going to keep going. And there's a vote later today on the minimum wage. Now, it's non-binding, but you're starting to see an area where they're trying to push for a show of strength. But I don't get the sense that anyone thinks that a threat is imminent. And actually, I think Angela Rayner is the person to watch here, and not because she is particularly loved by Corbynites. Many think that actually she is particularly tricky because she's someone who they thought was one of them, but actually, you know, called out Jeremy Corbyn on anti-Semitism. Not always, but, you know, later on. But I think if you had someone like that turn on Keir Starmer, I think that's more of a seismic moment, clearly, because that person has much broader support. Whereas this, to me, doesn't feel as though it's particularly flying.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.